I never set shows for 1:30 or for on the half hour. So I was sitting here at 1 o'clock and I was like, there's no way he didn't show up. He's just not that kind of dude. You know how you can just tell when you first start podcasting, you get those flakes that just don't show up. And you're like, you take it personally when you first start podcasting. And then after that, you're like, I get back an hour.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
You know, you start to see it differently. But I did listen to your last show, Masculinity in the Modern World with Dr. Stephen Poulter. And I got to tell you, I felt like I was listening to Paul Harvey and David Attenborough have a conversation. It was so, the voices were so silky smooth that I didn't even get to move beyond just sitting there listening to it. So how you doing today for a
Condamnia? I'm doing great. Thank you. How about yourself?
Living the dream, man. That was a great conversation. That's why I wanted to tell you, you guys had like two of the most soothing voices. I was like, this is just amazing. And he really does have a little bit of a Paul Harvey in his voice.
Yeah, he does. He's the same person. Like I think I've released close to 160 episodes and I haven't met a lot of the guests in person. Like I've probably met a dozen, I would say. And yeah, so I've been fortunate enough to have dinner with Stephen Poulter and he's just same guy in person too, right? So a lot of the times you meet people in person, you're like, oh, okay, different personality, right? And you have a personality for who you're going to be as a guest. And then you have a personality that's different in person, right? But with him.
The logo is the masks. We're very aware on this show what you're talking about. They tend to be two different people. I said the other day, talk to AT&T and then your mom, check your voice. Those are masks. Yeah. Like those are two distinctly different personalities. They act different. They walk different. They smile different. They do all these things different. And you have to remember
them
both.
Yeah. So, I mean, he talks a lot about the brotherhood. So I'm glad, I guess I'm glad I'm part of it.
I think it was absolutely amazing. And you guys are hearing Furkan Condandia. He is a author, mental health advocate, therapist. He wrote the book Pursuit of Self-Love, also a podcast host of Easy Conversations. It's all about the men, huh?
That's the hope, yeah.
Well, why don't you take a moment, tell us about yourself, and we'll start go from there.
Yeah, I mean, you've touched on a lot of the things. One of the other things I didn't have in there is and something I'm very proud of is being a father. That's been a huge, huge, I guess, not only an opportunity, but part of my growth. And how can I be better, not only for myself, but for my son? And that's a huge driver for me. How did I get here? I'm an engineer by background. I worked in corporate or still work in corporate, I suppose. But halfway through my career, about 10 years ago when my son was born, I really started questioning the meaning of life. And little did I know that was kind of part of my spiritual growth. And we all tend to go through it at different times. There's really no set prescriptive way of getting there. So I started questioning, okay, what am I doing with my life here? What's the meaning of it all here? What does it mean to be a father? What kind of legacy do I want to leave behind? And started kind of questioning all of that and went through a divorce and started seeking therapy. And I started to really get into that understanding of why men struggle. Why is this conversation around struggling in silence? Why is this sense of feeling isolated because of the shame and the shame I felt when I was
shame is a bitch. That's something that they don't mention that is issued to you. It doesn't come as part of the package when you're born. Shame is something that they layer on you over time to keep you from standing up. It's kind of like a weighted blanket carrying on your shoulders. You can let it go, but it's still there
absolutely.
The whole time.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, there's a lot of it, as you can appreciate. And carrying that around for me, there's also cultural pressures from family. And I started to understand, okay, this is what's going on. So that therapy allowed me to heal a lot of the past and perhaps look at the shame differently and understand, okay, I can either choose to let it control me or I can just become more aware of it and do something with it. And that allowed me to look at my relationships differently, have a different level of engagement with the people in my life, conversations changed as well. And I started to really open up about my own adversity at that time, the divorce or everything that was happening around me, just being more open about it. And what I came to realize after the fact was shame thrives on secrecy, right? The more we hide it, the more we fall into that spiral. And subconsciously,
self-loathing. We loathe ourselves for others' non-thoughts. They haven't even created the cage that we have around ourselves. We're not even on their radar, but we have their entire feeling of what they see when they see us. That construct in our mind is just as strong as one if they were standing and screaming at you face to face. We just don't realize it, that one's fake and the other is real.
And I mean, that's, I'll get into that a little bit too. So thank you for putting that there. And I was doing it subconsciously, but I started really opening up to a lot of the men that were close to me in my life at the time and just being open. And then I started getting the same openness from other guys, right? It's like, oh, thanks for like being open about your struggles. And so that kind of brought to me something where I was like, okay, what if this became a podcast? Like, and I was toying with the idea, and then obviously the pandemic happened and there's really no excuse not to do it. I had all this time that I wanted to fill. And it really got me through as well, because I had jumped into another relationship after my divorce, and that was rocky because I hadn't healed myself. And I was going through depression with that, and being able to talk to other men or just other people around things that we're all dealing with, especially with the social isolation during the pandemic, it really got me through, and the podcast was a great avenue for that. So, and then it's allowed me to grow even further. I was talking to like-minded people, learning from them, and then utilizing some of those practical insights in my life. So that helped. And then at the same time during the pandemic, I decided to get a master's in psychology with the hopes of becoming a therapist, because I was like, how can I be a voice for other men? How can I help them? And then, just one thing after the other kept adding up, like started a men's group with a friend. Yeah,
synchronicities. Exactly. It's not by accident. I mean, when we become our authentic selves, you hit your knees during the pandemic or during your divorce and you planted a tree. Tree takes a long time to grow, has to go over time. I think that the pandemic produced two different types of scenarios. Either you broke under the pressure, or you recognized who you really were and that the rest of it was just a wheel. I mean, at the end of the day, if you were to take a look at what we do day in and day out and that societal fulfillment that we have to, you know, create each and every day, if that was a wheel on a bicycle with spokes, the pandemic was a stick right in the center of it, and everybody flew off, right? We all flew off the wheel and we got to turn around and look. In fact, we were on one. And if you recognized you were on one, then you probably got your first step down a different path. You got to realize, okay, wait a minute. This is all being force fed to me. I'm growing to a mold. Men suffer from this very much so, just like women do. They get issued a tackle box of makeup at 13 and get called a princess. You know, we get, you better not come home crying because I'm going to give you more lumps. You better go back. If you don't go back there and kick his ass, then I'm going to be pissed at you. Like, what does that do to a kid's brain? Like, you mean go against my loving instincts to not hurt other people? And then when I do get hurt, go back and hurt him again, or I'm in trouble with the people that are supposed to provide me the most protection? Like, we're screwed. We grow into these Frankenstein molds when in reality, we're supposed to be a complete human.
Yeah.
Right. This is just my thoughts around these things.
I think we get conditioned at such an early age to wanting to take from others rather than just give and grow. Right. And we fall into this scarcity mindset. It's like, how can I just take from others rather than looking at, no, they can have theirs, I can have mine, and together we can have more. Right. And you see that in the conflicts we see in the world today. Why is there conflicts in the world? Like, why are we killing each other? And you're seeing that inner conflict just being projected outward. And in those conflicts, it's just at a magnified level. But as you said, as children, we're learning that early. It's like, oh, go take it out on the other child. Go take it out on the other person. right? And then that just kind of grows and manifests into something bigger. But yeah, to your point around synchronicity, that's exactly what it was. Like, I agree with you. People had kind of fell on either end of the spectrum as with respect to the pandemic. You either kind of realize that you have way more agency in your life, way more freedom, and you're not choosing it. And then for others, it crushed their reality and you know, they just weren't able to recover from it. Whereas like, oh, I had this false sense of...
Well, everything was ego-driven.
Exactly. And we live in a society where we want this sense of control, which is basically a fallacy. And then when it gets questioned, your whole world...
So much so. Catching wind with a cat's
net. Exactly. And then your world crumbles.
Just take working for
it. And I think for me, it was fortunately the other side where I started to see so much more opportunity in the world and so much more I can give back in terms of the little things too, right? So then, just that, the men's groups and talking to other people, I felt like, okay, I was finally stepping into what my purpose was in this world. And that's obviously going to evolve over time. But right now, I feel like I am where I need to be. I've finished my program in psych and now I'm working part-time as a therapist and continuing a lot of the work that I've wanted to do for a while. And it's just been a blessing.
You know, I have a similar background to yours in that I did work in the tech and consulting industry for a while after military and growing up in a hee-haw town, you know, that kind of thing. And what I figured out was that I'd gone through all these different roles. I'd done some really cool shit and in different types of career paths. But at 0% of the time was I fulfilled. I was damn good, you know? And then you get further and deeper into the corporate world where you get to see the strings that are pulled inside the machine that creates, you know, the huge issues and ramifications across like an entire country or a town or whatever it is. You know, and you start to realize that nobody has any capability of understanding what is happening outside of their box. And for me, I found myself in pain every day without the understanding why. I'm like, I know I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do. What am I supposed to be doing? This sucks. I'm getting zero fulfillment out of this. Why is my life like this? And then now, further down the journey through those synchronicities, I've found that, you know, understanding is figuring out that you're a different human in all those roles, and all those roles are not yours. So anytime that you are living outside of your authentic self, you are creating symptoms of mental issues, right? Mental issues are, for me, they're trapped. It's a cage around the mind of a societal constraint and a way to think and be. And all of the symptoms, depression, anxiety, whatever they mean, are like tea kettle whistles coming out of that cage because it's not allowing itself to be full. It's not allowing itself to be itself. So I found myself constantly trying to supplement my pain with other things in order to, you know, maintain that job in the corporate world over and over and the wheel and the, can we get more? Can we get bigger numbers? Can we get more numbers and blah, 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 blah. Can we make our lie look bigger than their lie? You know, because nobody knows what's going on behind things. And I just said, fuck it. I'm out. I was like, you know, I'm supposed to be doing something bigger and I started podcasting. You know, the show started. It's a show created to bridge societal divides in a judgment-free zone using candor and humor. And just like yourself, I couldn't feel any better about where I am in life than now for two reasons. One, I'm doing what I love. And two, there's nowhere else to be. Once I understand that, then it doesn't matter where I am.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just being in the present moment. I know that sounds cliche, but it truly.
Where else
exactly,
is there?
Right. And you were talking about pain. And I think a lot of the pain, every part of pain is self-induced at times, right? Like I read, this is going to sound creepy, but I read some dude at the yoga studio had a tattoo on his back that said, pain is death.
It's the location that throws it. Feel free to say it was a scroll by the door.
Well, the tattoo said pain is a messenger. And I was like, yeah, that is true, right? Yeah,
it is.
And the suffering is the choice, right? We choose that suffering, right? And whether you're focused on the future and you have all this anxiety about things that may or may not happen, like we were talking about earlier, or you're focused on the past and in this depressive state on, oh, well, all these things have happened and I should have done this, I should have done that. It's all suffering that we're choosing for ourselves, right? And it's all this attachment we have, like Buddha said, right? The source of all, I'm going to paraphrase here, but source of all suffering is attachment. And we just have attachment to all these things. And the letting go in the present is what really matters. And that's a battle that I feel like I fight every day. And I think that's the only battle I really need. Yeah.
Who doesn't?
But it's the only battle I need to fight because things are going to happen all around me. But waking up every day and constantly reminding myself that, you know, life is precious. Every second that's going by is dying. But I'm still here. And how can I make the most of it with what I have and what I've been given?
What you're discussing is mindfulness.
Yeah.
In so many different viewpoints. And one of the things that I had to reconcile was, of course, that motor mind, that thing that's always happening. It's always there. And I had to figure out for me that A, I'm not the source of those thoughts. And B, those thoughts are only real when I grab a hold of them. I feel like there's an infinite number. They were always swirling around us. And we sit inside of a snow globe. And anytime we reach out of that globe and we grab one of those thoughts, whether it's anxiety, whether it's something from the past, wherever it's at, because it's not in your globe, because that's now. You're reaching outside of your area and you pull it in. And guess what happens? If it's a red one, it turns the whole inside of your globe red. And then you have to hold it there until you figure out, you know, that there's a purple one out there to grab onto, because we don't even let go of one before we grab another. We actually start hoarding them like we're grabbing cash in a phone booth with a fan, you know, and just stuffing them in our pants and then wondering why we're uncomfortable, right? But at the end of the day, they're always going to be there. Dude, I believe we collectively all share the same thoughts, and it's just a matter of who chooses which one at any given time.
Yeah.
Because people think heinous shit. Everybody wants to kick the baby on a plane at least once, right? It's whether or not you stand up and do it.
Right?
You know, you can think it for a minute. It's John that has gone too far and decides that today is the day he's going to drop kick a kid. Like, that's how it works across the world. We're all at a breaking point at some time or another.
Yeah. No, I like that. I do agree that we are thinking the same things. It's which ones do we attract at the time, and which one do we tend to grab onto? Earlier, we live in such a scarcity mindset, and you know, you're talking about the corporate world too, and it's easy for people to just call it capitalism and then just be like, oh, we're so much better because you guys are capitalists. But it's like, no, it's greed. At the end of the day, it's greed. And however you want to disguise it, like, just because you're virtue signaling against capitalism means you also have your own form of greed. You want some other, maybe whatever you're greedy for is something else. So it's that divide, right? And I know you mentioned that part of the reason you do this podcast is to talk about these issues in society. And that's where we're seeing so much divide right now, because everyone thinks they're better than everyone else. Meanwhile, we're all figuring it out at the same time.
That's like snakes in a bag thinking one has a better situation than the other.
Yeah.
It doesn't make no sense. Dude, we're all sitting beneath the knot. Like, what is this situation? We're just fucking crawling around in here screaming at each other like idiots.
Yeah. Well, and
like, it doesn't
I don't know if you've heard about lobsters too, right? Like, if one of them's trying to crawl out, then everyone just wants to grab onto them and bring them down. Or I heard something about that. And that's what it is.
Listen, Carl, if I can't reach, you can't reach either. Just because you broke your rubber band doesn't mean you're free.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if it's crabs or lobsters. I hope the listeners aren't thinking this guy's way off, but it's something like that.
It's called the Tragedy Academy. I don't care if it's a lobster, it's a crab. If it's a crab, it's a lobster. It's a crustacean of some sort.
I mean, when you think about it, like, that's the world we live in, right? So if you decide, and I remember, like, when I was making choices in my life that were serving me, there were so many people who were just still trying to, like, remind me of the choices I was making in the past, or trying to say, well, why are you making so many changes at once? Like, it's like, what is it to you, right? Like, and then there were the people in my life that were really happy for me and supported me through my growth. So it's figuring out who you want to be around as well, right?
I call that the atrophy of life. When you start moving forward and you start changing yourself into your authentic self, you have to realize that the people staring at you have two problems. One, they have nothing to look at you for now except for what they're not doing themselves, right? And two, you're no longer on the same frequency. You don't have the same desires. You don't have the same mindset, and they're not going to find reward in your, you know, situation. They want to look the other way because you represent every single thing that they are capable of doing without doing it. It's much easier to tell you, oh, hold on a minute, dude. Why are you being so frilly, foo-foo, and Birkenstock, motherfucker? Last week, you know, back in the day, I saw you hitting some Jack Daniels when we were out after that fucking RFP or wherever the fuck it was. You're not all that. Would you grow your beard now? No, that means that I'm actually moving down my path, and you're standing back there in mud, wishing you could be with me and telling me things to make me fall down so that eventually you might catch up.
Or just stay back. Right. Like, I think for a lot of people, the comfort is in not moving, right? Staying stagnant because
it's so comfortable. Yeah, the victim chair.
Or it's just hard because, I mean, I have compassion for people in those situations too, because there is so much uncertainty around it, right? You don't know. And I think once you take that first step, you can't use it as an excuse anymore that, I shouldn't change, because now responsibility falls on you and you've proven it to yourself.
There's nothing worse than proving yourself, especially when you're a kid. Like, you prove yourself once, your parents will never let you live that one down. You already proved yourself, so everything you're doing now is you're capable of doing everything, but they go off on you about the prove yourself once. After that, everything that you fail at, it means that you just didn't prove yourself.
Yeah.
Like, that'll give you a fucked up mind.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of it, right? I think the other piece around you were sharing in terms of just recognizing even your thoughts change, right? Based on your environment. So perhaps when you were surrounded by certain people, then you are all thinking the same thing and it feels comfortable. But then when you start moving in that direction of, if we want to call it growth, it's then you're also changing the thoughts you're surrounding yourselves, right? So yeah.
Yeah. You often wonder, the powers that be, if they recognize that we obviously understand that we can all work in a remote situation. A lot of companies really put the brakes on that for the longest time possible. And they say that it's because of a real estate footprint, which we get, right? Nobody wants to be the first one to eat the bullet to send everybody home and sit there with a giant ass building. But if they all do it at once, then, you know, the pandemic kind of lets you get through that. Everybody got hammered at once. Everybody comes out the other end. No shareholders pissed, right? But at the end of the day, I kind of thought where I was, I forgot where I was going with this. And it's, I think that they bring everybody in collectively. And that's because if they can give you a certain set of items that you have to do and create an environment, it's easier to hold you inside of a room or a building and maintain that situation than it is if you have people free thinking in remote locations and not having the ability to feel that umbrella that a corporation will put over you. you know, where you feel safe, but you're really never going to go anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it does.
I think that's everything we've been talking about so far, right? This sense of false sense of safety.
Yeah. It's energy.
False sense of safety. And I mean, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of speculation and people call it conspiracy theory around some of this stuff, but there's always some truth to it, but I just don't know where it goes. But I think we've become very sedentary, and I touched on that in that episode you were talking about as well. We've become sedentary, and that's why we feel so isolated. And coming back, like, full circle, even with men, that's the biggest issue I see. And I talk about this all the time. We were used to being in tribes and being together.
Hunter-gatherers.
And having these conversations. And obviously, this is why I love the whole podcast movement, because we brought that back and we're using that technology to our advantage. But it's allowing us to reconnect with others and probably even to a larger scale, obviously. Yeah, exactly.
Global mind.
And you're realizing that you're not the only one who thinks this way.
It's amazing how we could have continents between us and never have contact. And then the moment that we start to have this global consciousness, because that's what the internet is, the moment that we have that, even if it is rickety with hangers and fucking old antennas and whatever it is, it's still a global consciousness. And we're starting to see that people we have zero ability to communicate with have been living a exact experience in a different place. If that can't tell you how alike we are and how the human experience is the same for everyone yet unique, I don't know what else there is. It really is. I think that, you know, to your point, like, we're in a position where we're reaching more people with podcasting, right? And I think that because we weren't able to go out and touch hands and hug and do all these things during the pandemic, and people were finding their voice, one of the reasons I think that podcasting came out on top from the pandemic is for the simple reason that the human ear is the closest place to our mind. And to be given the privilege of being an earbud, a headphone, or a room alone to sit in someone's ear, you become a confidant. You become a change. You become a friend. You become someone to look up. That's why there's a lot of responsibility in podcasting, because you're influencing how people think, how they approach their family life. What you don't realize is that they're asking you questions in their mind while they're navigating things.
Yeah.
Right? So, with that, the onus is to keep a lot of responsibility and pay attention to your surroundings and ensure that you're putting out a message that can affect change or to help people affect change. And I appreciate that you've done that, that you've recognized, you know, your capabilities, your strengths, and what you were put here to do. I would love to ask what it was like realizing that engineer is not the definitive path of you and that you really are here for the people.
Yeah, I mean, I touched on it.
Because you could be a fucking great engineer, right? The best of the best, and not be your calling.
Yeah, and I'm
not saying that you're not doing your
No. I think it's all in stages, right? We all go through a journey in our life, and that was part of my journey early on. And I'm grateful for it because it allowed me to really push myself and academically. And it helped. It helped me grow in many ways and allowed me to become very resilient and prove to myself that I can basically apply myself to things that even if they get tough, I can stick with them, right? So there were a lot of lessons through that. And I think at the end of the day, any specific journey you go through in your life, there's always different seasons. You have to look at the lessons that you get out of them, because you could easily look at all the negativity.
Good, bad, and indifferent.
I think for me and just everything I've learned now, it makes sense. But at the time, whatever it was, I started looking at my mortality as a human. And I started asking myself, and these questions were just coming into my head. So it's, you touched on that collective consciousness, and that's and that's what perhaps was going on.
Well, that's got to be the most selected thought that there is out there. If there was a library with what happens when I die, why am I here section, those books look like they've been drugged behind a semi for about 20 years. They've got like a whole bunch of those old cards that you used to have to stick in the back of your library book. There's like a stack in that bitch. That's a thought that everybody's been grabbing.
Well, and I think it makes sense because it puts everything into perspective, right? And you start questioning all your choices. Now, people often, again, will avoid that question or run from it because that too can bring about discomfort, right? So for me, kind of started asking that question. I'm like, well, what do I want people to say, you know, if they come to my funeral, the people that do? Clearly, it won't be my coworkers, right? So
they'll have you replaced by the next Zoom.
So that hit home. And then I was like, well, what do I want them to say? Do I want them to say, oh yeah, he was a great engineer, you know, like good guy. Or do I want them to say that, you know, he was a great father. He's a great person. He made a difference in my life. And this wasn't meant to be like something egotistical. It was more like of substance, right? What am I doing with my life? And what am I, what kind of value am I adding into this world? So it was like, how am I changing the world? And it doesn't have to be grandiose that, oh, you're changing all these lives. Like I gave that perspective too. Even if it's one life, that can have huge effects, because you think about even with the men's groups I'm a part of, if I'm able to influence one individual's life, he's going on then passing that on to his children, his wife, and then they're passing it on 100%. Further. So you can have a huge chain reaction. And you see that with a lot of men. Again, you know, I've been fortunate enough to read about Malcolm X, who's one of the, like, that was something I read last year, and his stuff really stuck with me. But he's gone, right? He's been gone for 60 plus years, but people are still talk about him, still inspired by him. So you can still have that effect, right? So that's what really hit it home for me was, okay, so this engineering thing, yeah, it's provided me with a career. It's allowed me to live a certain lifestyle. It's been rewarding. But that's not it. That's not all. And that's when the shift started happening for me, was really questioning my mortality.
I think that a lot of what we do as human beings is simply to avoid that question alone. I think there's a book by Ernst Becker called The Denial of Death, older book. And in it, and I'm going to paraphrase and jack it up just like, you know, everybody else does, but essentially there's the theory that humans, when they became conscious, had to rectify what reality was and mortality. Once you realize you're going to die, that's the ultimate, you know, F you, right? So you have to create something. You go for religion first. Religion, you start plugging it in. You try to say, I'll get an afterlife. You know, that's where we're going to go. We're going to do that first. And then eventually, when nobody's proved it, you start to figure out, well, what's next? Legacies, right? So you start to create things, monuments, books, and different things to show I've been here. So I do have eternal life, right? Unfortunately, we turned that into something nefarious. Rather than creating for the benefit of all of those around us, we started creating for a legacy and nothing more. So we started putting together make-believe. At the end of the day, we started creating these scenarios that were never needed to begin with. Like, we need a fucking impossible Whopper. That's salad that smells like beef. Like, that's a situation we created, but somebody's life revolves around getting it to fucking smell the right way, right? If that's not making shit up for no reason, then nothing is, right?
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I think with the religious afterlife piece, if people don't believe in that conceptually and or it can't be proven, they just kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater. They're like, okay, well, then that's
yeah, it is kind of a
so it's like, well, I don't believe in that, so I'm just going to live my life. But if you, again, come back to the present moment and you think about, well, I can still live for eternity through my actions, as you said, people, you know, even after I die and have this legacy, then everything I do has meaning, right? Like every action, every interaction can have something of significance. And unfortunately, when people have that, like, well, conceptually, this whole religious phenomenon doesn't work for me. I'm just going to live a hedonistic lifestyle and just enjoy my life. And, you know, I am too.
To the ego.
I was doing that too, because I had this rebellion against God for putting me through difficult life situations. And I was like, oh, you know what? I'll show him. And the only,
fist in the
air.
Only
person I was hurting and we talked about suffering, I was suffering myself. There's nothing. Every morning I'd wake up feeling like crap. And then I'd fill that void again with the same behaviors and repeat every day.
Man, that rinse and repeat sucks. Sucks so bad. And you find yourself, there's only so many things that you can comfort yourself with before it becomes an addiction, before it becomes a hindrance in life, before it becomes all these things that are going to gum up what you're trying to do. And you're going to sit there in your mess until you realize that you're creating it. It really sucks. Like I said to somebody yesterday, the day before, I was like, dude, the bathroom floor is cold as fuck.
Yeah.
Like when you're at the bottom and you're doing shit to it, that is it. Like it doesn't get any worse. Bathroom floor is cold. Like you have to turn your life around and go the other direction.
How sad is it? You know, when you kind of like, again, you take that higher resolution view of that specific moment in your life. I remember that too. And I'm like, man, is this what I'm supposed to be doing with my life? Like, is this what meaning is? And I was just like, what am I doing here? What is this? You know, stuff my face.
I'm guilty of that for a certain portion of my life. The irony that it's like starving in a grocery store. Like everything is here and we're forcing ourselves to stay on aisle 3 with all the motor oil. Right? When we know damn well it's everywhere around us, but we're willfully saying no. Aisle 4 is where I have to stay. You know, and it's
well, the irony,
move on, Chief.
Well, even the irony with that too. I mean, you know, people that are like, oh, there's no heaven, there's no hell, but it's like, no, you are creating hell. That's the irony. You're living in hell and you don't even realize it. Right. And so.
I believe that we actually live in heaven now, and that our state of mind is a mental illness that is forcing us to not be able to recognize that we're in the most beautiful place that ever existed, and that time is in fact an illusion and a mental illness in and of itself. I think that we're collectively waking up from what a fog, some kind of fog of the mind that has us walking around where no other animals come near us. There's a reason why we look like a video game when you had a flashlight, you know, and things would move away, right? That's what animals do to us. Why? Because we're fucking nuts. Not because, you know, we're they you know, they haven't warmed up to us yet. They're like, no, collectively, they've all said, those guys suck. They bite heads off of things. They do all sorts of wild shit. They're building things that make no sense.
Yeah.
Just stay away from them. They'll wake up eventually and start hanging out with the rest of us. That's just my theory. Also, it's always now, right? If it's always now, that means there's no future. It means there's no past, right? So that means if you did die, you're still here. Nothing can be created and destroyed.
No, I mean, I see truth to that theory, right? And I think what you're talking about is consciousness. Right. And the more we raise it, for ourselves. We collectively raise it for the world and everyone else. But the more we raise it, the more we see that, yes, there is a heaven here, right? And life is good. And this whole idea of time is a construct we've created to make sense of our existence, but it doesn't have to be that way. But yeah, I mean, I'd spend a lot of my spare time.
It scares some people when you say things like that. But at the end of the day, the argument is, you know, I try to keep things in perspective by saying, has it ever been tomorrow? Has it ever been yesterday? No matter where you've been, have you ever been able to say anything but now? You can hypothesize about the existence of shit all day long, but 9 times out of 10, you're going to get there and it's not going to be right. And it's still now.
Yeah.
Right. It's just this weird construct. What is it? I think there's a Taoist philosophy that says worry is preposterous because it serves no purpose in the now, except for to give you probably diarrhea.
Like,
that's all the worry does for you.
Yeah.
It serves no other purpose.
Absolutely. I agree. But yeah, I think that's essentially what's going on is consciousness. And you see that with people that are opening up and realizing it, that they're just living a better life and they're not attached to anything, as we touched on earlier.
So I have a question. Yunoizen.
Yunoizen.
Please explain what that is.
So that's kind of my brand that I created for my ego. And I just wanted to be unique. So I was kind of researching words that I would use. And yunoia is a Greek word for a beautiful mind. And that was kind of what I wanted to preach in the brand was there's this beautiful way of living life that we can create, right? And you were touching on it just momentarily ago, like in terms of this whole concept of heaven on earth and the choices we make. And with our thoughts, we can either create this concept of heaven or we could create this concept of hell. So how do we get to this beautiful mind state and experience this feeling of Zen? So that was like the whole packaging of the branding. And then a play on words with the podcast too, right? So the Yunoia Zen, the easy conversations. That's where it all came from. Yeah.
I love that. I love that you incorporated that into the actual podcast title as well. I love Easter eggs. I love things that are put together with detail and thought. When I sat down and did this, I went through so many different things like writing up values, what we're going to represent, how we're going to portray ourselves, you know, and those small little intricacies show up in the logo or show up in things that are said throughout the show. That most people may not recognize, but it was part of your journey in creating it. And it has its moniker in there, whether anybody knows or not, is, you know, yet to be seen. Kind of like the base of our logo says non purus scholem. That means not a real school. It's so stupid. Like, we're not anything. We're not real. We're just fucking talking like everybody else. We've got no accreditation. So, and it has that meaning to me and the people that worked on it because it has those layers.
Yeah.
To it.
I mean, there needs to be that connection that's only yours, right? And I think for me, the process was simple. And I'm not even comparing the two because they're so far different in terms of value I associate with them. But even like when I was thinking of a name for my son, you know, we're trying to figure out, well, what are we going to name him? And then I was researching names and I was really putting a lot of emphasis on the meaning behind the name, because for me, there's a deeper connection with it, right? That's something I share with him. And because it's such a responsibility. I didn't realize how big of a responsibility
it is. Right? It so is, man. You F up a name, you can give somebody some serious issues. My first name is Matthew with one T. I was fucked from day one. Like everywhere I went, misspellings. I had a driver's license for 6 years that had 2 T's on it. I just didn't give a crap anymore. I'm with you on this. My wife is pregnant right now. We have the middle name on lock. It's the first name that I am a bullied child as well. Extremely bullied. So I am aware that names can be targets. And my wife hates when she throws a name out there and then I rip it apart like I'm 12 years old and make fun of it. And she's like, but that's not what it means. I'm like, but yeah. Like, this is what it's going to be. It's like, his last name is Hicks, dude. He's already in a world of shit. You can't combine certain things with that. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I, again, underestimated how much pressure there was around picking a name. But yeah, so it's just that connection you have, right? Like, and understanding, like, even the fact that, you know, I have a second name now with my son coming into the world. There's only one individual in this world who calls me dad, right? So there's, again, there's that connection behind it, right? So I put a lot of value and meaning into those things as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's honestly where past lives come from. Past lives are generation. It's a genetic and hereditary insanity, so to speak, that we just continue to pass on, and hopefully it dilutes over time.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we're paying off past debts. That's just a parent. Somebody else has some kind of trial, tribulation, and then they have a kid in the process. You don't come out the other end Ivy League. You come out on your knees, scraped up, and trying to get to Ivy League. When in reality, you didn't have to go anywhere. You just had to not be in the situation you were in. The rest of it's gravy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's the deals we make, right? What are we going to do when we're here? So I...
It's hard, man. Mindfulness is a vacuum to me. Like, so I try to stay mindful. I've been meditating for like 4 years about 4.5 years now. And I try to every single day. It's a regimen for me. And I feel like there are times where I am in a mindful state. And if the non-mindful state were a hole in the wall, it would have a vacuum and it would be something that I look into to see what's going on. But occasionally, if that vacuum's too hard, it's going to suck me up against the wall. And I have to not only be mindful, I have to be mindful and pull myself back out at the same time until I can recognize it again. And during that moment, when you're still in that vacuum, it is very difficult to not be the human that is having that interaction, to not be that ego, to not bite the bait, to not be in the argument, to not believe that you are what they're saying, and all those weird things. And it really takes some effort. But if you maintain mindfulness, you are a lot less likely to stick your head in that fucking porthole. You'll look through it.
Yeah.
Right? Look what's going on out there. But you won't go sticking your face too close. Me, I have a tendency to do shit way too many times before I figure it out. So me, I'm stuffed in like a fucking cork.
Well, it's like you were saying earlier, right? You see these thoughts and you just keep accumulating them and just grabbing onto them.
They're all mine, motherfucker, like Pokemon.
Yeah.
I'm just catching them all.
I still like how mindfulness has become so like this thing, right? Like it's like a trendy thing now. And it's like, oh, it's something you have to achieve. And again, it's just, these things just drive me a little crazy at times where it's like, okay, let's just not put so much focus on it. It's just something we do naturally. If you know, think about it.
Yeah, we're mindful with issues keeping us from being mindful. They make it look like a job.
Well, I mean,
meditation's a job. You know,
when I'm talking to clients, they're like, oh, I can't meditate. Like, it's just, I can't sit down and clear my head. And it's like, no. What's going on when you're cooking? What's going on when you're walking? That's mindfulness, right? That's a meditative state. Like if you're able to just bring yourself back to the present and just not focus on all the other things that you've got going on, let's not make it a lot harder than it needs to be. And unfortunately, people just have this vision or image of what mindfulness is. And because it seems hard, then they just run from it.
Yeah. You wouldn't grab a race car going around a track any more than you should a thought going through your mind, right? Let it go. Just let it rip on through. You're not going to reach out and grab it by the fucking side mirror. What's that going to do? It's going to fuck up your day. You're going to have your arm all pulled out of socket, and there you go, doing things you didn't have to do. One of the things that I'm trying to remind myself of every day is that which I do not do today will not be a problem I have to worry about tomorrow. If I don't open my mouth and get pissed today, then tomorrow I don't have to feel guilty for having opened my mouth and getting pissed, which for me and my mental health is way worse than the actual opening of the mouth in that moment, because I will live in a shroud of shame, guilt, pain, all those things for what I have done. Right. So that goes back to where we started.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Well, that's what life is, right? Full circle.
It really is, dude. And shame sucks. Like, if you are somebody who's handing out shame as your way of maintaining your position in life, shame on you. Right? Because that's a horrible way. You should want to lift people up rather than hold people down to maintain your position in this fucking Tetris game.
Yeah, it's but bullshit. I think it goes back to that whole analogy we were talking about of people wanting, like, misery needs company, right? And it's on a very subconscious level. And again, I think we were talking about the crabs. It's the same idea, right? It's like, I want you to stay here with me so I don't feel lonely. And we do it.
It's true.
Like, subconsciously, it's like, why?
Addicts are real good at that one.
Exactly. Well, what I've learned recently, too, is we're all addicted, too, right? And you could just,
something.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, it's the people that have substance abuse that get the most heat, but
least societal acceptability. Exactly. That's all it is. This one is not doing what everybody else has to do on the stage. It's kind of like the kid that's up on the stage smacking his butt during the school play. Like, we're all mad at him, but it's still just a play. Like drinking is the smacking of the butt in a school play.
Exactly.
It's not acceptable, but it's still the same fucking thing going
on. All around. Yeah. And I think that shame piece, like I said, we do it consciously. It's not, but at the end of the day, the other thing I touched on earlier was having that abundant mindset. How could you hope that everyone else, like, grow the pie, right? Like, I do a lot of, like, negotiations as part of my job, and everyone's just stuck on, like, no, how dare you get more value out of this? It's like, what difference does it make? As long as the pie's getting bigger, why do you care what I'm eating, right? Like, and even, like, at work, I get challenged. They're like, well, what are they getting out of it? It's like, who cares? Are you getting what you like?
That is a thing, isn't it? We don't like anybody else to get more than we have. And if we do, we have to rip them down for some reason.
Even if you're getting everything you want, you're still upset that the other person walked away with more. And I'm like, who cares?
It's what you bring to the table.
Yeah.
You know, I think that this is probably a great place to give you a chance to talk about where you want people to find you. Go ahead and give that CTA. And we'll wrap up, because I feel like I could sit and talk to you all day long. I think we have similar mindsets. I think that you can recognize when someone else has had to hit their knees and that they've kind of turned a corner. It's kind of like standing in a room of people. There are those that are in the room, and then there are those that are not. And you start to recognize who's in the room and who's living in a past or future state, or one that is revolving around what people think of them. It's super bizarre, but I have to say, the further that I've gone down this path, I don't know if it's me recognizing more things, kind of like when you shop for a car, like, now you see it everywhere, but I feel like more eyes are opening. More people are recognizing that the reality can be a false construction, and that we actually choose all the things that are around us, all of it. And if we focus on the beautiful things and the things that bring other people joy, right? Giving back is like going to the gym for people, right? They don't want to do it, don't want to do it, don't want to do it. And then after they're done, they're like, fuck, that was great. Like, there's no downside to going to the gym when you're done. It's all up until you get there. And I think it might just be because you have to look at the face of someone that has it worse than you, and you have to admit that you might have it good.
Yeah, and I think you attract what you give attention to, right? And it's just, that's the way things go. But I appreciate you having me on here. This was a blast, and I'd love to have you on my podcast too, so we can continue the conversation.
Anytime.
Yeah, CTA piece. This is where I get a little uncomfortable, but yeah, I think, you know, as you alluded to, is my Instagram handle too. So that's the easiest way to find me as far as social media goes. But podcast, we touched on it. That's probably the best if you want true value, is to check out the podcast, Easy Conversations.
Bro, the guy's like Zoloft with a voice. It's so peaceful when you talk. It's so peaceful.
Yeah, well, check out the podcast if you really want that peaceful state. But yeah, that's where I'm, like I said, adding the most value in terms of my time and the conversations I'm having with people in terms of giving back to the community.
Well, I believe it's a beautiful thing that you're doing. I like to tell people, you know, the strength and vulnerability. And I believe that people like yourself are being a lighthouse. And a lighthouse does nothing but be a lighthouse. And through being a lighthouse, others find their way, right? So if you stand up and be the best you that you can be, which is what you're doing now, more people are going to find their own path through that. And it's not that they're going to follow what you do. It's that they're going to see it's okay being them. And okay being them is really what we should all strive to be, right? Okay being myself. Okay waking up in the morning, not in debt to reality. I mean, what a horrible way to feel like every time you get out of the bed in the morning. And I say all these things, I do the show, I talk to these people because I have to remind myself, right? It's a constant battle. It is trying to remain in the now and realize that, you know, you're perfectly imperfect. So I appreciate your strength and vulnerability. I appreciate that you found yourself and your purpose. And I'm going to continue to watch you grow. I'm super excited. I got popcorn in a front row seat. To somebody who's got an amazing beard and hair, you look like you should have a scarf and be standing in front of like a motorcycle at all times. You're a debonair.
I appreciate that. I appreciate it. Thank you. It's been a pleasure and an honor to be here and talk with you and share some of the stuff I'm doing. I'm just one of many, many in this world. So we're all trying our best. And like you said, it's a daily battle. A couple of days ago, I was fighting my demons. So occasionally I have to get in the ring and, you know, get my face knocked out and get back up again and start again. So that's the journey of life.
That's that vacuum, man. It'll hold you in there. It'll keep you in the entire room. You have to crawl back out of it. It's a bitch. So thank you for being honest about things like that. I know that our listeners are going to be super impressed with the way that you've approached life. Again, I appreciate you. And everybody remember to be cool and keep learning.